Reactor online. Sensors online. Weapons online. All systems nominal.
Hello, everyone. This is Carrie with the Unicorn Company podcast, reporting from our secret Canopian Catgirl base hidden somewhere in the mountains. And today we are going to talk about why we hate Land Air Max. Now, of course, I'm stealing this a little bit from MechFrog. MechFrog, I hope you're having a wonderful day. But we're going to talk about Land Air Max, the in-universe perspective, and also we're going to talk a little bit about the gameplay perspective from someone who's experienced them firsthand. Before we do that, though, we do have some news to cover, and there's a couple other subjects I want to touch on, but some of those can wait for another day. So the main thing in the news is new releases. Yes, there have been a number of new releases since I have had my last episode, and I want to go ahead and touch on just a small number of these. The first of these I want to mention is that Catalyst Game Labs has released a Clan Spaniel sourcebook. Now, if you are unfamiliar with Clan Spaniel, they are a cartoon that exists in clan space that's made for teaching clan children about the inner sphere and the clans, and it's sort of like a little bit of a children's cartoon mixed in with some propaganda. And it's made to indoctrinate children and teach them, hey, this is the way of the clans, this is what we're fighting for, this is what the Inner Sphere is fighting for, because they're dirty surats. And just to give them that sort of idea of, this is who you are, this is where you're from, and this is, you know, what's going on. The source book also gives us a perspective into clan media. And it is available on Catalyst's website for $1.99. It is a PDF. Let me see. Can I get it? Nope, you can only get it in PDF format. The other thing that Catalyst has released, the other three things. First of those is the Vulture, the Vulture Premium Miniature, which we will be doing a review of on our YouTube channel. And this miniature they are selling for $14.99, which I believe is a very nice, it's not as much as you would pay for a force pack, but it's also not as much as people have paid in the past for the premium miniatures, which is always a good thing. They have also released the Salvage Box Urban Mech Lamb, which retails for $29.99, and the Star League Command Star for $30. So these are on sale right now on Catalyst's website. They should be going up on third-party sellers pretty soon. I do know Fortress already has an entry for it, but they just don't have it in stock yet, and they will be selling it for $26.24. Speaking of other releases, Ironwind Metals has been busy, and they have released four miniatures. The first of these is the ARC-2R Archer. The item number is 25218, and it retails for $19.95. And this is a direct metal representation of the plastic Archer. So this would be coming multi-part. And to be fair, I have seen, if you go on Ironwood Metal's website, there are pictures of it. It looks pretty good. We have one on the way to review. Ironwind Metals, because I'm getting it through Fortress. Ironwind Metals is starting to sell it on the 20th, so about 9 days from now when I'm recording this. But if you want to get it sooner, you can go to Fortress. In fact, all of these I'm going to talk about here, you can get through Fortress. And the Archer, like I said, retails $19.95, and Fortress is selling it for $15.96. The next of these is the Jade Phoenix A. Once again, has a Iron Metals sell date of the 20th. Fortress already has it available, and this one, it's pretty much the A version of the Jade Phoenix. Item number on it is 25220. It sells for 1916 through Catalyst, or sorry, it sells for 2395 through Catalyst or 1916 through Ironwood Metals. There's also another Jade Falcon mech, the Night Gyre. This is the prime configuration. It's 25217. Ironwind Metals will be selling it for 2295. And Fortress sells it for 1836. And then you have the Rifleman RFL-3N or 3C, depending on which variant you want to run. This one is 1516 through Fortress Miniatures and Games. Ironwind is selling it for 1895. So that's what we have as far as new miniatures coming out. And of course, I do plan on getting the Rifleman. Well, I already have the Archer, the Jade Phoenix, the Night Gyre, and the Rifleman ordered. I may order a premium Rifleman at some point just to compare it to the Metal Rifleman, because one of my biggest things has been, why are we not having Ironwind Metals make the premium miniatures? Yes, they're not in plastic, but it would be a huge, excuse me, huge improvement in my opinion over what we've had so far from the premium miniatures, where we've had issues with mold, not mold lines, with print lines, with scale being a big issue, apparently, I'm guessing because of the way that they do it. The Rifleman, I know there was like a mini Rifleman, and then there was the Rifleman. So, yeah, hopefully we'll see how this scales compared to an actual plastic Rifleman. We'll also, I plan on ordering one of the premiums. So after I review the mech individually, I will probably go ahead and compare it to the premium and see what we have there. I did also want to say that all of these miniatures will be reviewed on our YouTube channel, so go ahead and check that out. And as I get miniatures in, I try to get them in like little waves. You can vote on what miniatures I will be reviewing, in what order I'll be reviewing them. So, like right now, for example, on our Patreon, we have a we have a poll, that's what it's called. Sorry, we have a poll to see which of the miniatures we'll be reviewing next. And right now, the options are the Premium Vulture, the Premium Wolverine, which I have not seen on the Ironwind Metals website yet, but was gotten for me by a friend. Thank you so much for that, Ed. The Ost Scout from Ironwind Metals, the Arrow 4 Urban Mech, and the Ironwind Metals Locust. So right now that is the poll that's up, because that'll cover which models I review in what order. And then once I have these four more in, they will get their own poll once I have them all put together and ready to do the videos for. So if you want to be able to get in on that, then go ahead and go to our Patreon at patreon.com/unicorncompany. And if you want some really good deals on some metal miniatures, box sets, and just about anything else you need for Battletech, check out our sponsor, fortressminiaturesandgames.com. Bobby, the guy that runs it, awesome person. And he also is the person that runs Southern Assault every year. So, helping him helps keep Southern Assault alive, because that is one of the best tournaments on the East Coast, if not the world, for Alpha Strike. So, now that we've covered that, like I said, there's some other things I want to talk about, but I think those deserve their own episodes. I've been seeing a lot of stuff as far as, I guess you'd call it, a grift going on in the Battletech community, or slightly outside of it. But yeah. Also, one other thing in the news, the Kickstarter stuff, shipping should kick in on Monday for the first wave of Kickstarter people. I am one of those. Once we have the products from the Kickstarter, the YouTube channel will be getting a ton of new content covering all of the force packs. The only one that I did not order was the Battle Armor Force pack. I figure I can pick that up later on because it's Battle Armor. There's really not much to review it. Same with the Elemental box. There's not a lot to really review with them. They're Elementals or they're Battle Armor. I do think, if I recall correctly, the new box set comes with like a squad of Interior Battle Armor in it. I might be wrong though, which is definitely a possibility, because I have been wrong before. So let's go ahead and get into today's main subject. And this, of course, is why we hate land air mechs, or at least I do. Now, if you want to talk about land air mechs, there's two routes we can go with this. So first of all, like I said, is the in-universe perspective, which is interesting. It's interesting for a few reasons. The first of these being that land air mechs overall, in-universe, are sort of an anachronism because nothing else in the universe is like them. And also, they have a very weird design lineage and a impetus for their design. Outside of the universe, obviously, there are issues. There are some major issues, and I think I'm going to save that for the end of this, because I think that's going to be something that can kind of be summed up and covered in there. So, starting with that in-universe perspective, like I said, land air mechs, they are a huge, huge technological marvel of the Star League and the Star League Defense Force. And I feel like they both get too much attention and not enough. So let's look at that historical perspective, that Star League Defense Force, why were these built, why were these designed perspective, and then we're going to go from there. All right, so what we know as the land air mech today. Oh, hold up, my cat is having a problem. I'll be right back. Okay, now that that's taken care of, and I will at some point in the next few days be harvesting more sand. Which, by the way, if you ever have me commission paint models for you, the sand on your base comes from the banks of the Rappahannock River here in Virginia. So, that being aside, I'm trying to remember where we were. Oh, yes, land air mechs. I don't remember where I was. Anyway, so land air mechs, they were something designed by the Star League Defense Force, specifically by Admiral Peterson. Now, many people will tell you that these are the pinnacle of technology in the Star League era. And yes, they are technological marvels. In fact, land air mechs were originally designed, or not designed, but conceptualized by the commander of the Star League Defense Force in 2680, Admiral David Peterson. Now, Admiral Peterson wanted something that would bring together the Star League Defense Force, Army, and Navy. And this is because there was a lot of inter-service rivalry between the two, which had led to some animosity. And of course, when he got appointed to the commander of the SLDF overall, there was actually a good amount of backlash over this because of the fact that he's an admiral, he's not a general. And people in the SLDF army or the ground forces thought that the commander of the SLDF should be a general. Meanwhile, for the Navy, this is a big boost in morale because here you have a naval commander, an admiral, being promoted to commander of SLDF overall. So he needed something to sort of make the to bring together the Star League Defense Force. And in order to do this, he thought to himself, and he pretty much said, I want something that can operate as both a battle mech and as an aerospace fighter. The results of this would be the Land Aramek program. Now, the other thing to remember about Admiral Peterson, this guy was not just the father of the Land Aramek program and the resulting designs. Admiral Peterson was that kid in high school that was the overachiever, but he didn't stop overachieving. So when he became the commander, there were several things he wanted to face and repair. One of those was a deficiency in that relationship between the ground forces and the aerospace or the Navy. The other things that he decided that needed to be done was a prioritization of the rearming of the Royal Divisions with advanced weapons and equipment. So all those good toys that the SLDF Royal Divisions have, the Marauder, which he did not directly make happen, but he once he saw this thing existed as something that could be made even better for the Royal Divisions, he did it. The development of the Advanced Combat and Maneuvering Skills Project. We better know this as the Gunslinger Program. So all those Corita warriors wanting to go out there and duel with the SLDF, he's the one who said, you know what, we need to make better warriors for this. We need to have the Gunslinger Program. He was also the person who conceptualized and led to the development of the Reagan Space Defense System. That's right. The thing that made the Terran hegemony absolutely impossible to just invade on a whim was made, or at least conceptualized, by this guy. So much of that modern Starlink Defense Force, all the good toys, all the equipment, all the awesome stuff that Kerensky had, this is all because of him. And Admiral Peterson, I feel like I want to do a video about Admiral Peterson and not about Land Aramex, but unfortunately, I promised you a video, or sorry, a podcast episode about Land Aramex and about why we hate them. So, yeah, as much as Admiral Peterson played a big part in this, there were other cogs in this machine, as it were, and we have to look at those as well. And of course, we have to look at the Land Aramex, which I have opinions, strong opinions about these things. All right, so Peterson gets people to start designing Land Aramex. People are like, all right, well, we can do this. We can build these things for you. We can make awesome transforming things that look kind of like Starscream, and or maybe Peterson was a big fan of 20th century Japanese anime. We never know. I mean, that could literally be it, but still. So Peterson goes and gets this project rolling. Of course, you have a few different people who try to get in on the project, and the first of these was the bimodal Shadowhawk. This was designed by Allied. I cannot talk. Allied Aerospace in 2680. And the bimodal Shadowhawk pretty much is exactly what it says. It's a Shadowhawk that can go between mech, or I want to say air mech and aerospace fighter, or mech and air mech. I can't quite remember. The prototype went through testing by both of the branches of the Starlink Defense Forces. And by 2682, they were done with their initial evaluations. The SLDF went and said, hey, Allied Aerospace, here's what we want you to fix on the design. They went and reworked the machine to address the poor performance of the initial design that the Starlink said needs to be fixed. And that new version was evaluated again. Now, during the testing, if I recall correctly, there was actually someone who lost their life during the testing of the Shadowhawk LAM. And while this would lead to the Starlink Defense Force eventually turning the design down and instead of course, saying, "Hey, a test pilot died," they went and said it has too poor fuel efficiency. It's a bureaucratic way of getting out of saying publicly, "Yeah, no, we don't want this because it killed somebody," even though its job is to. Anyway, so Shadowhawk Lamb, much like the Osprey, has a pilot die in the testing phase, and unlike the Osprey, it did not get approved. So, with the Star League having more thought to it than the modern, or the 20th century, 21st century U.S. military, the Shadowhawk Lamb was not to be seen again by the Star League Defense Forces. Now, of course, it did have 20 prototypes built by Allied Aerospace, who attempted to sell it off to somebody, anybody, who would buy this thing. And I don't know if it's the poor fuel economy or if it was the fact that somebody got, you know, crash landed in the thing and didn't make it through. But nobody really wanted to pick up the design. Nobody was like, "Hey, Allied, that looks cool. We want that." So, of course, Allied Aerospace fails in what they're doing. And of course, at this point, you know what? The Land Air Mech has failed. And the dead test pilot, I think, gives us at least one reason to hate this machine, but there are many, many more, and we'll get to those. So, after the Shadowhawk Lamb, you have another company enter this field, and this would be Lexatech Industries. Now, 6 years after the Shadowhawk Lamb, initial evaluations are complete, so 2688, they introduced the Stinger STG-A1 land air mech. Now, this is a full transformable land air mech. It goes from mech to aerospace fighter with a land air mech mode in between. And it was the first successful mass production land air mech. Now, 2 years after this, another company, Harvard Company Incorporated, developed the Wasp Land. And these two designs are very similar, almost as though they were designed by the same person moving from firm to firm. I can't confirm that, but just saying. Then again, also, there's only so many ways to make an aerodynamic fighter shape that then transforms into a walking robot, or in this case, walking battle mech. So the weapons payloads on them were similar enough where, like I said, it looks like these are designed by the same person. In the long term, I want to say the bomb bays were slightly different, as the Stinger Lamb ended up having bomb bays that could carry Aero 4 missiles. But otherwise, I mean, these are very similar mechs and very similar aerospace fighters. So these two companies get their Star League contracts. They're selling these mechs to the Star League. Star League's buying them up. Now, while they're doing this, I'm sure that you probably remember Allied Aerospace. They go and they look at what they did wrong. They look at the Shadowhawk and go, "Okay, here's where we messed up. Here's where we failed. Here's what we need to fix." And they come back in 2692 with what would be considered the pinnacle of the Star League Defense Force LAM project. And that would be the Phoenix Hawk Land Air Mech. Now, the Phoenix Hawk is the heaviest Star League Defense Force type of land. It was also based on the venerable Phoenix Hawk battle mech, which we're all familiar with. And I've avoided making a mech tech about because it has more variants than there are days in a year. But that being aside, it brought that land air mech concept functionally up to the medium weight class, which it's pretty awesome. But why did it take so long to get there? And also, you have to wonder, why didn't either of the other firms think of that first? Because once you're in air mech mode, you're fast enough where it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter about your ground speed anymore, because you're gonna fly super fast along low altitude, go recon your target, and come back. I mean, at least in theory. So anyway,
Allied Aerospace gets their machine. Everybody's happy. The Starlink Defense Force is buying these in droves. And nobody wants to talk about the problems, though. So, first of all, in order to even make them competitive with their ground-based counterparts, and competitive being a loose term here, they needed to increase the weight of all these designs. So the Phoenix Hawk, the Stinger, the Wasp all gained weight in order to account for their conversion equipment. And even then, they're really still not on par with their ground-based counterparts. So in the air, they're slower than similar aerospace fighters. And that's because they couldn't use endosteel, ferrofibrous, or extra light engines. Meanwhile, the rest of the Starlink Defense Force is being outfitted with amazing equipment that doesn't require extra weight to transform and also works as advertised and not so much as, hey, look, you know, we made a transformer. Do you want to pilot it? It doesn't move as fast as other stuff on the battlefield. The scout versions are not as scouty. The medium version, which is generally seen as a heavy scout slash cavalry type unit, just is not up to either task. But these are the pinnacle of the SLDF. These are the pinnacle of the Starlink. Like I said, I'd rather talk about Peterson and all the cool stuff that he built. But this is where we are. This is what we're talking about. So these machines had other issues as well. One, they're incredibly fragile. They require a lot of logistical support, a lot of maintenance time. They have the three different modes that they're in. And if you use them as advertised, the way that it works is that you take this thing, in theory, let's say you are spacebound. You want to go ahead and recon LZs. You can go ahead, shoot this thing out of a dropship as an aerospace fighter. It hits the atmosphere, gets down low, turns into an air mech, finds the LZ, scouts it out, maybe turns into full-on mech mode to engage something that it needs to do, like light support or something like that, and then turns back into an aerospace fighter and flies back, and you know, you have your ground, you have your LZs, the recon information for them. But the SLDF had whole regiments of these things. They called them striker regiments. And the concept is they were fast moving and they could technically get behind enemy lines and do horrible things. Except nobody accounted on the problems with the lander. A hit in the right spot can get you stuck in a mode, like get you stuck in air mech mode, which isn't the worst. The worst is either getting stuck in full battle mech or full aerospace fighter mode. Because if you're stuck in full aerospace fighter mode, well, guess what? You are now the slowest medium or light aerospace fighter in the combat area. You are outmatched by just about everything out there. Same with mech mode. You get stuck in mech mode and you are outmatched by just about everything out there. I think what would have been interesting in this case is that the SLDF or the Starlink said, you know what, we need something that's not a mech and not an aerospace fighter, but both. And this leads to the other problem with land air mechs, in my opinion. Not just looking at the heavy logistical problem, you know, where you have three factories producing all of the replacement parts, and each factory is owned by a specific company. So it's not like they're working with each other or anything like that. And then you have the incredibly high amount of maintenance time and wear and tear on the design because it transforms like a freaking transformer. And yeah, no, that's a lot of moving parts and a lot of maintenance. And I feel so badly for the technicians and ground crews that had to work on these things. But then you get what I think is the biggest problem. They were never designed for long-term combat. So what I think is the death knell and truly proves the horribleness of land air mechs is the Second Reunification War and the Starlink Civil War. So
looking at what happened with the Second Reunification War, you have this conflict which was essentially created by somebody for the Starly. It wasn't a naturally occurring, if that's even a way, a phrase to use, but it wasn't a conflict that was created through means that didn't involve somebody else poking and prodding the bear, as it were, to make it happen. I went off on a tangent there, and I just totally forgot. Oh yes, but Second Reunification War, Star League Civil War. This is a spot where, the Star League had not counted on having to fight these kinds of wars. They were fighting brush wars. They were fighting lone Kurita mech warriors who went rogue. They weren't dealing with large strategic movements. And while, yes, the standard SLDF Army and Navy could handle large strategic movement and strategic scale warfare, they were also fighting against a war that was essentially an asymmetric war as well as a standard war, because you had the official forces of the Torn Concordat, the Outworlds Alliance, the Magistracy of Canopus. Not the Rimworlds Republic, though. They were nice until they weren't. But anyway, but you had these forces who were fighting a conventional war, while you also had insurgents on their side fighting against the Star League Defense Force in ways that they had not counted on. What this did, it put those striker regiments with all their fancy, amazing lands. And I don't, I, okay, so first of all, I don't mean to sound like Pierre Spray here, where it's like, oh, advanced technology is horrible. No, advanced technology in Battletech is awesome. Targeting computers, pulse lasers, XL engines of the clan variety. These are all amazing, wonderful upgrades in Battletech. These are wonderful technologies. Artemis 4, Artemis 5, advanced technology is not a bad thing. It's not something I sit here and go, oh yeah, no, that's bad. No, we don't want it. But the land air mechs, even during that period, even after all those years, were still bleeding edge technology as far as what they did and how they worked. So you had mech warriors who were also trained as aerospace pilots, which also adds to the logistics, by the way, because if it takes a year to train a pilot for one or the other, it now takes two to train them for both, and of course they're not as good as their specialized counterparts. That being aside, you have these people driving around in land air mechs in an extended conflict where the houses really aren't in supporting it. They're just kind of like, yeah, no, we will keep paying our bills, but you sort of brought this problem on yourself there, Cameron. And it was reflected in the way things played out, in the way that the Star League Defense Force essentially was like begging for support. And in the process, the Terran hegemony was emptied. There were very few units that stayed in the hegemony, making it easier for Stefan Ameris. I was going to say Stefan Ameris. Anyway, it makes it basically easier for Stefan to go ahead and pull his little trick on Christmas. But yeah, they were at their limit logistically of what they could do. So these striker regiments already are seeing that hurt. Then on top of that, you have what is essentially the takeover of the Terran hegemony. Suddenly, all that logistical support that was already strained to its limit is cut off. Whatever you have on hand is what you have. You don't have extra parts for the lambs. You don't have extra conversion equipment pieces or all this other stuff. Lexitech and Harvard Corporation and Allied Aerospace, they are now under the influence of somebody who really does not like you. And for example, I want to say that, this is a classic case of having an army that depends on immediate on-demand resupply, which suddenly doesn't. And specifically, a highly advanced piece of technology in that army, which depends on that on-demand resupply capability, which has just been shut off. So now you have the land air mechs, which no longer have the ability to get supplies to replace parts, so they naturally attrition in the SLDF. And when I say attrition, I mean attrition. Because even if those companies were not directly inside the hegemony's sphere of influence, they did have factories that were located in other houses and stuff like that, but there was still only three sources for these parts. And of those three sources, if they're not getting paid, they're not sending you the parts, especially when they get an invoice from somebody that says, oh yeah, no, now all land air mechs go through here. And to think about it, you probably weren't getting the supplies straight from the factory. They were probably going to a warehouse somewhere in the hegemony, which then turned around and sent them to the front. So, yeah. I mean, so the land air mechs suddenly had even more of a fatal flaw involving the issues they faced with resupply and a long-term war. Now, after Kerensky leaves during the succession wars, they are still made to a certain degree, especially in the Draconis Combine. I believe the Wasplam factory was the last one to fall. And, well, quite frankly, yeah, it couldn't keep up with what little demand there was during the Succession Wars for parts for that one machine. They could barely build more of the machines to send out to go fight the clans or fight the other houses or whatever. And you know, that alone shows me why these things are not a great weapons platform. They're not a great system. They're too reliant on having needs filled very quickly. Of course, this brings us to the Blakists. Now, yes, I admit, before we even get to the Blakists, the clans did toy around with a Phoenix Hawk land air mech trying to make it work, and that whole having two pilots thing still kind of a problem. Also, you still had all the non, you couldn't use the XL engines, you couldn't use, you know, there's a lot of stuff. And the Lord of Blake took and essentially did a similar program. They designed three new aerospace fighters for it, or not aerospace fighters, land air mechs for it. They refer to these as the Puka, the Wineta, and oh, the Ure. So all three of these designs come out. They do have the advantage of being land air mechs that are controlled by a person who literally plugs into it. Because the Mani Domini had direct neural interfaces. And they also, as seen in some of the fiction, had the ability to essentially download directly from a computer any information they wanted. So what this meant was that if you were a Mani Domini warrior and you're told, hey, you need to go take that land air mech out and fight these people, you could easily go download the information off the land air mechs or off the whatever server you had into your head about how to operate a land air mech. 10, 15 minutes later, you're in the thing operating it like a veteran. But that's not feasible for everyday use. That's not feasible for use by every warrior in the Inner Sphere or the clans because of the DNI, which has very, very bad effects on people after, I want to say, 15 years. It can drive you insane. It can turn you into a potato with legs. So that's not a solution that's viable. Also, the Lord of Blake looked to clan equipment to try to make their land air mechs more usable in the modern era, at least during the Lord of Blake, the Blakist era.
So they go and they make their land air mechs. They throw clan technology weapons on them to try to make them better, which ironically, with the Warda Blake originally planning to go, and I should have said spoilers at the beginning of this, but anyway, with the Warda Blake's original plan to be to go wipe out the clans as their gift to the Star League once they were approved as members, those land air mechs did not know. They would have been like ripped apart by the clans. They just didn't have the punch. They didn't have, and all of them, I want to say, had a 5.58 ground speed. So they weren't very fast. Not very fast at all. Oh no, they were all 4.6. They're all 4.6, so they're not very fast. They're going to perform poorly as aerospace fighters, as battle mechs, and I mean, stepping outside of the in-universe perspective, I really think the Warda Blake were given land air mechs as a way to try to solidify that, hey, look, land air mechs are a bad thing. They're used by the baddies. But of course, that's not what happened. People still wanted their land air mechs and were willing to overlook the Blakus thing. So, I mean, that's mostly the in-universe perspective here. I mean, there were some honorable mentions along the way. Ironically, the Rimworld's Republic got it the most right, in my opinion, with the Screamer land air mech. Now, the Screamer was the Rimworld Republic's idea of we need a land air mech to fight Kerensky. And it was designed. It was built. It was made. It was at least the prototype. And it's an amazing land air mech. I want to say it's armed with an ERPPC. That's all it needed. It was a long range harasser that could go find things. Very, 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 very well designed. The Rimworld's Republic wanted it to be more of a direct line combat mech. And the only version of the Screamer that ever existed was eventually shot down over Terra by Kerensky. Well, not by Kerensky specifically, but by his forces during the liberation of Terra. So the only good thing to come out of Amaris' super secret high tech uber weapon programs got destroyed because he didn't know how to use it. Now, one of the engineers did sneak off to go talk to Kerensky about it and presented him with all the specs and everything for the Screamer, which, like I said, it's probably the best Star League era land air mech ever designed. And Kerensky just didn't have the facilities to build it. Otherwise, I'm sure we would have seen it in SLDF forces. And I'm sad that we didn't, because the standard battle mech version of it would probably be pretty awesome during the Succession Wars, when everybody's like, well, we have these things, but we don't have a way to make them. So I feel like that was something that was kind of sad and is an honorable mention. Also, you had the Champion Land Air Mech, which I still feel as it's the only jumping variant of the Champion to exist during the Star League era, partially influenced the Clan's upgrade of the Champion to the Champion C, which, if you ever look at the Champion C, it's essentially the 1N2 with jump jets smacked on, and it's all clan tech. It's an amazing mech. They also threw an XL engine in there, which, yeah, because they also upped the armor. So it's an up armored 1N2 with jump jets, jump capability of 5. It is essentially the mixture of the good parts of the Champion land air mech with the 1N2. And then you had the Scorpion land air mech concept, which, no pun intended here, didn't get off the ground because it was awkward and weird, and Defiance just said, it's not worth the time. But in the end, it was used to upgrade the Scorpion during the 3060s in the technical readout Project Phoenix. Now, in order to do that, they looked at the Scorpion Land Air Mech, looked at the good aspects of it, pulled them, built a new mech around it. Once again, it's a good thing, but it's not amazing. It's something that the land air mech part just did not succeed. So yeah, I mean that's to be fair, that's the biggest thing for me of land air mechs. The concept was neat. The concept of a mech that turns into an aerospace fighter is really cool, especially to like a 15-year-old kid or something. But looking at it from a modern sensibility and an adult sensibility, it's like, this is a bad idea and you really shouldn't pursue it. In addition to that, land air mechs have historically been really hard to integrate with the game. And if you were to time travel back to the early 90s and play against an opponent who has a land air mech, you would walk out of there in one of two opinions. One, you want some land air mechs. Or two, you never want to talk to your friend again. Because the common tactic with land air mechs back in the day, you multiplied their jump by three, I believe. And that was their air mech movement for flying around. And they didn't land, they just kept flying. So it's not like they had to land and then fly really far again, like they had a partial wing and improved jump jets. Nope, they just flew all over the place. So the land air mechs would turn into air mech mode, start the game in air mech mode, fly around the table, and kick people in the head constantly. Now, I know you're thinking, well, why don't you just shoot them? Well, they're flying, they move 15 hexes a turn. Or like in the Phoenix Hawk Lambs case, I want to say it was a 696. So it would move 18 hexes in a turn. Good luck shooting that in Battletech. In Alpha Strike, that's a 36-inch move. That is like a TMM of 5 plus 1 for airborne. You have an average warrior of 4. So a short range, point blank range where it's next to you and it's kicking you in the punch table. You have like a 10 to hit. So. But yeah. That's why we hate the land air mech. In fact, I hate land air mech so much that this episode is not getting its own mech tech. Instead, I'm going to devote the time to making more of the cards that you all deserve for having been patrons. You can find those over on our Patreon, patreon.com/unicorncompany. I will be releasing, I'm going to go back through all the backlog. I'm going to just start going from episode one until now. If I've covered a mech like a single variant of it, I'm going to just do all the variants. So I think I covered the Omni Marauder, which means technically it's separate from the Marauder, but I might just drop the Marauder too. Not the Marauder 2-2, but you know what I mean. So drop the cards for the Marauder and the Omni Marauder. I think I've talked about Shadow Cat, I know I've touched on the Crab and a few other designs in one of the early episodes. I'm gonna go ahead and drop all the cards for the Crab and all that once I have them finished. I'm gonna be working on those this weekend. So, yeah. Also, before I leave, I want to thank all my patrons. You all have made this possible for me, as well as my sponsor. All of you are wonderful, and I appreciate that you helped make this possible. If any of you are in California and want to meet, I will be at Strategicon in Los Angeles. And not this upcoming weekend, but the weekend after. Oh my God, it's already that close. Yeah. So I'm flying out there week after next.
And I invite any and all of you to come out and say hi at Strategicon. Tuck Davian will also be there. And I hope that we're going to have an awesome time. I'll be running a Alpha Strike poker run. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that, but it's essentially chaos. So anyway, I have taken far too much of your time today, and I hope that you have enjoyed listening to me. My name is Carrie. This is the Unicorn Company podcast, and all of you have a great day, great evening, great whatever it is where you are. I'm gonna find my meaning. I can make a change. I wanna play the game. You wanna